From his easy chair on the porch, Finebone, the old masquerader, sat looking across the river. He was driven to long hours of introspection, believing that the old men of his time were being picked off one by one, victims of the celestial sniper. He saw little through his cataract-scarred eyes. Long ago, he could tell the time of day by watching for the ferry boat crossing one way or the other. But now, only the little light that filtered through his retinas betrayed the position of the setting sun. "Nearly 6 o'clock," he reflected. "At this time of year, we would have been practicing when I still had my eyes." The young men of La Penitence District were not practicing their dancing either. Successors to the dwindling generation of masqueraders, they knew little of the intricate steps and less about the dancing papier-mâché bull and Mother Sally, the transvestite performer on stilts, or the boy musicians who elaborated their fantasies on fife and drum. If the young men were described as successors to the older dancers, that was more out of nostalgia than conviction, for Christmas had lost much of its significance. For Finebone's daughter and grandchildren, Mashramani was now the most exciting time of the year, with festivities marking Guyana's birth as a republic. Old masquerader Finebone dreamt more vividly now about those bygone days, when in early December, the masqueraders and their acolytes had brought their rehearsals to high perfection in anticipation of Christmas Eve. Born in 1911, his parents moved from the Savannahs to Alexander Village in 1919 and to La Penitence, the adjoining district, a year later. The most notorious masqueraders lived and practiced there, creating an atmosphere that gripped young Finebone, who earned his right to attend their reunions by working hard and doing well at school. "If you want to watch," his father kept reminding him, "you got to work." And Finebone complied. He worked to watch. But unbeknown to his parents, he watched to learn as well, nourishing a furious ambition to emulate the boy dancers with their apparently boneless legs. And when he wished to practice a new step, he would go downstairs where, from the dark bottom of the house, he would wait for the woman to light the carbide lamps in the masquerade yard. Then hardly had the drums struck up than he would bend his back to watch his legs, recalling the constantly repeated advice of the masters to their attentive apprentices. "Watch your foot, them. Watch your foot." Fired by the music and flickering lamps, he would inhabit a world of mesmeric sounds, a secret world of excellence that shut out everything else. In less than 2 years before he was 11, Finebone was aware of his extraordinary prowess as a dancer, yet he remained content to watch. On Christmas Eve, he asked his mother's permission to follow the drums through the streets. "From far off," he said, anticipating her objection. "How far off?" she demanded, imagining that her son would become embroiled in the affairs of the mysterious masqueraders, who were reputed to remain dancing before well-to-do houses until their occupants bought them off with a handful of silver coins. "Far off," Finebone repeated. "You remember how I come first in class?" And his mother's anxiety vanished at the recollection of his glowing school report. So soon after taking his midday meal, Finebone went and sat on the staircase to await the gathering of instrumentalists and dancers and their hangers-on. The moment of departure came after a lengthy preliminary, when the five players rehearsed on their diminutive reeds in brief, uncertain runs. But to Finebone's surprise, the band and its followers went off through the La Penitence streets without playing a note, accompanied only by the tramping of 100 feet. And it was not until they arrived at the corner of Prince's and Smythe Streets that their progress was interrupted by a shout which brought the drums to life. Moments later, the five players joined in, and the papier-mâché bull began swaying in unison with the music, which brought mid-afternoon sleepers to their windows. In front of the throng, Mother Sally, the transvestite stilt dancer, walked imperiously, as though scorning to join in the dance. But from time to time, she took up a position in front of a mansion and would not go away before the expected gift of money was thrown onto the parapet or brought out by a servant. Among the growing crowd of followers, many had come to see the boy dancers perform. Only the very young spectators had yet to learn the routine. First, the papier-mâché bull, swaying across the road in a deliberate effort to halt the traffic. Then after a brief pause, the boy dancers, little men posturing in their regalia of multicolored tunics, unmindful of the heat and sweat that made runnels on their dark faces. Finebone, hugging the grass verge, decided that he would not venture among the young dancers after all. Overwhelmed by the occasion, his confidence had deserted him. The boy dancer's turn had come, and Finebone could only look on as they began dancing, dismayed by the cowardice that obliged him to remain on the sideline. While he was engaged in his secret apprenticeship, he thought that once he had learned his craft, he would need do no more than show himself. "Here I am, a dancer of note," he would say, proclaiming his excellence to those within earshot. He watched, filled with the same envy that had prompted him to spend endless hours in practice, away from the eyes of those who might mock him. The procession was approaching Haley's Bakery, where, according to tradition, the stilt dancer always started the performance, and the others were relegated to a supporting role. Suddenly, on an impulse, Finebone started dancing by the roadside, relying at first on the simpler steps of the boy dancer's repertoire. He took care to watch his legs, as he had heard so often. "Look at your foot, them! Your foot, I tell you!" Dancing to instructions that had long ago forged a voice in his head, he nevertheless attracted the attention of a section of the crowd. And gradually, reacting to their unspoken adulation, he began dancing for himself, with that effortless display of a repertoire that had not been taught. Then, without knowing why, Finebone set out for the middle of the road, where the boy dancers careered beside the throbbing drums. There, he let himself go, filled with an ineffable joy, the only dancer in plain clothes, who, even so, saw himself dressed in scarlet and yellow. Of a sudden, another drum, silent till then, struck up and was greeted with a shout from the onlookers, who saw it as a sign that Mother Sally was about to dance. Stepping imperiously towards the entrance of Haley's Bakery, she stopped, looked up the road to make certain that no oncoming traffic would impede her progress, and then, in a flamboyant gesture, she lifted up her skirt above the waist to a roar of approval from the crowd. "Oh, me God, lady, lady," a woman shouted out, "left me alone." The stilt dancer had begun the dance that many found disturbing, that touched a deep longing within them and roused specters from another age. Finebone, the boy dancers, and the papier-mâché bull stood aside respectfully while coins rained down, thrown by spectators who had taken possession of the hall above Haley's Bakery. She performed under a punishing sun, from time to time pretending to fall, before recovering in one miraculous movement, and finally, encouraged by the crowd, she began to spin in ever-narrowing circles, until the frenzied drumming drove her to a performance of perilous intensity. That afternoon was a turning point in Finebone's life. When his parents came to learn of his public display, they forbade him to mix with the masqueraders in future, fearing that they would no longer be able to interest him in a worthwhile apprenticeship if he did not give up dancing. But Finebone, having foreseen their objection, threw himself into his schoolwork with a fervor that was equal to his passion for the dance. So much so that when the masqueraders began to practice for the next Christmas season, and Mother Sally presented herself at their front door, singing lavish praises of their son's ability, Finebone's father invited her in to share a glass of imported beer with him. "The boy coming first and second at school, all the time," the father said proudly, as he invited the visitor to sit at a low table on which stood a vase of artificial flowers. "Finebone," he called out, turning his head towards the back of the house where the young dancer was waiting, delighted and confused at the same time that a performer of such awesome talent should come to his house. Now he answered his father's call, not knowing what he was to say if addressed by the dancer on stilts, the man who danced alone in woman's clothes. "Well, come forward, boy," his father ordered. Finebone appeared at the entrance to the kitchen. "Who would think," declared Mother Sally in a booming voice, "that this is the young man that they dance in front of all those people? Come and shake my hand." Finebone took the proffered hand and stood bewildered, while lavish compliments were paid him by the visitor. It was as if he did not credit his view of himself when expressed by others. "We're going to talk about you, boy," his father said, "so go downstairs and wait till I call you." Finebone did as he was told, certain now of his future as a dancer with the masquerade band that roamed the capital in the Christmas season, and that he would be able to wear the striking regalia of those who belonged. He knew he could, from now on, answer that powerful tug of a nameless longing without offending his parents. That December, Finebone left with the group on the long journey through the suburban streets to the center of town, where the drums beat at fever pitch on broad asphalted roads, and constables dressed in blue uniforms found themselves powerless to control the gathering crowds. The new recruits performed in Mother Sally's wake, and once, after Finebone had drawn applause from admiring onlookers, the lady bent down as a signal that they should dance together. Then the drum fell silent, leaving only the fife's piercing call to accompany the two who danced in the quickening shadows of a December afternoon. That was long ago, when Christmases marked not only the turning of the year, but also the birth of an alien martyr to whom we lost our soul. Finebone, the old masquerader, looks out across the Demerara, wondering why people now prefer the celebrations of Mashramani to the ghosts of Christmas time.